Hi, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program's broadcast. Today's Wednesday, October 16th, 2019. So I'm going to take you through our phases of growth. And like all of our broadcasts, I try to pull out of it principles or ideas that are applicable no matter what stage of the process of the journey that you're at. Even though the backdrop of this broadcast will be the stages that we use, the metaphors that we use, to mark change in our clients as they participate with us, I want to draw out from it principles that are important that really we can apply in all of our relationships at home and all of our contexts. So let's talk about the idea of the use of phases. There's sometimes a discussion in our field about the use of phases and this idea that you don't want to reduce things down to a simple behavioral component. And I think that's a very wise idea. I think one of the foundational ideas at Evoke is to not reduce children or anybody for that matter to behaviors, but really to understand what the behavior is trying to tell you, trying to teach you. Because even in the most aberrant behaviors, there's some wisdom, some idea, some lesson. I talk about this all the time, that we would be wise to listen to what behavior is trying to tell us before we try to change it. So there's a value in understanding that these are metaphors that help us understand and teach to pull children through a process, but we don't want to make it a one-size-fits-all, a template. I believe very, very strongly that therapy, that good psychoeducation, cannot be manualized. While we have a therapeutic manual in our program, an important part of it, a critical part of it, is this idea that it's really about how to think. It's the same thing I talk about in The Journey of the Heroic Parent. It's not a direct explanation of what you should do, right? It's not a guidebook, but more it's an invitation into a sensibility, a way of thinking. And that's what all of these are about. So we talk about the use of metaphor. Metaphor is fantastic. Parables, stories are fantastic because they're richer than an explanation. Right, they have different layers and values to them. And whatever level that you're at, you can access the metaphor. In this way, metaphor helps to bypass resistance. I always use the example that we can talk to a child or an adult for that matter about baseball. And you can use metaphors from baseball about teamwork, right, about preparation. And on that level, very few people are going to disagree with you. So in a sense, somebody's agreeing with the principles that you're trying to teach, no matter how far down they're allowing them to reach, to drill down. So you're getting agreement, you're getting an idea across, even with somebody that's very resistant. And you see the unconscious with storytelling and metaphor, right? You plant seeds that can later grow. I know for me, when I've read things, I'm sure this is true for a lot of us, we go back and we read old stories and we find a new richness to those stories. So storytelling, metaphor are powerful ways to get around resistance, to come in through the back door. Like it works for everybody, you meet the child or the person that's listening where they're at. In our program, part of moving through this process from earth to fire to water to air phase is about stages of change, right? And again, they're not demarcated perfectly. I want to emphasize that somebody else's fire phase is not the same as your fire phase. And while that can be challenging to clients and students sometimes, I think it's important. Because one of the mistakes I think that we can all relate to is when we simply compare ourselves to others. So it's a broad framework that embodies some basic ideas, but it doesn't mean that it's the same for everybody. So hard skills include things like making a fire, making a Bodrio fire, being able to set up a tarp, to pack your pack, maybe doing some craft some kind of leather craft or something like that. Those are the hard skills, kind of the physical aspects of camping therapy, of outdoor, of wilderness therapy. Then the soft skills are more of the language, how you're interacting with people, how you're communicating with people, how you're problem solving, how you're listening. So we pay attention to hard skills and soft skills. I love this idea. I think it's important that our staff shifts, and I think this is one of the pieces of wilderness therapy that's very unique. The staff shifts go for 8 days. Some of you know that already. So your child is with a staff member for 8 days. Many of the skills have to be signed off by both staff shifts. And that's important because, as you know, it's easy sometimes to avoid somebody that's difficult, right? Wait for the good cop, if you will, to arrive, the one that you get along with. So you have to learn to kind of connect to and communicate with more than one personality, and I think that's important. And although wilderness therapy has the advantage of having 8-day shifts, we still want some ability for your children to be able to respond to different styles, different people. So they have to get things signed off by both sides. It's a loose idea to measure progress. Again, it's not perfectly standard for everybody. It's individualized. But we also start to see and talk about and assess motivation. I don't like when people talk about anybody and say they're not motivated, because motivation is relative, right? You might not be motivated financially, but you might be motivated spiritually. You might not be motivated to go on a diet, for example, because you're worried about how it looks, but you might be worried about your health. I remember one study when I was in college where they were trying to motivate elementary school, middle school children to bring back books that were lost from the library. So they offered a financial reward, and they got very little return on lost library books. And so when the student council was meeting with the principal was asking about this, and the student said, This is a wealthy school and a wealthy school district, and so returning a book for a dollar is not going to matter to these kids. But if you give them a free pass to wear their own gym clothes instead of wear the school-issued gym clothes, then you're going to get a lot of returns. So they switched the incentive, and they got a lot of their books back. So motivation sometimes is about context. And even negative behavior that sounds self-defeating, that's part of what therapy offers us, right? That something that looks self-defeating, something that looks like a clear lose-lose for the child, still has a payoff. So it's important to start to talk about and think about motivation. We try to define success different for each child. You know, some children make a fantastic amount of progress, but they still don't reach the level that some other children reach in the program. And that's just a lot like life. Like I said, it's guiding principles, but we're not tied to them. So let's go through our four phases. We use nature. We lean a little bit on some Native American ideas and thinking of nature as this idea of a higher power, this thing that can guide and teach us to some extent. So during earth phase, we think about the two principles of orientation and compliance, right? We want some basic cooperation just for safety purposes. Are they keeping themselves clean? Are they feeding and hydrating themselves? How are they doing on the hike? An important regulation for us is the group only moves as slow as the slowest participant. So that first phase allows us to kind of look at the new members in isolation, if you will, a separate from the group. During the first few days of the program, they don't join the group right away. They're not involved in the social dynamic right away. They have contact with the staff. They have contact with a peer mentor, but they're not engaging. We're not losing them in the broad group to begin with. After Earth phase, they'll be introduced into the group socially as a whole. So they write their life story. This becomes a benchmark of their level of insight, their accountability for their life. We don't expect the life story to be a perfect draft, but it's a reference point. We contrast that with your hopes and intentions letter later on to see how they match how accountable, how honest they're being with themselves, with you, with us. You may get some of these assignments, some you may not get. You can talk to your Evoke therapist about some of these assignments as we go along tonight and see if they're the ones that you'd like to see. We have them list some very simple things like three reasons for coming to Evoke and three goals associated with that. We ask for and invite journaling all the way through. Sometimes journaling can be drawing. Sometimes it can be oral, but we want them to begin to have a conversation with themselves. That's really what journaling is. It's a conversation with themselves. Very, very rarely do we encourage journaling to be sent home because we want it to be private. We want them to have their own space. This is a context where you don't have a lot of your own space. So much of it is based on the group. So journaling is one place where you have your own space. Basic expectations like low-impact camping, right? Are you being respectful of nature and the surroundings? Making sure that you're disposing of food and garbage in the right way, that you're not destroying trees, that you're burning wood and in ways that kind of meet low-impact camping standards. Like I said, they're separate but present. They're sitting from, you know, 10 yards to 20 to 30 yards away from the group. Still under our observation, you should know that their peer mentor can spend a significant amount of time with them. In fact, in some ways, they get more attention than the kids in the group because they're getting a lot of one-on-one attention from the staff that's assigned to them, from their peer mentor. So there's a lot of that, like I said, there's that special, that time where we can observe just them. Letters home begin during this phase. You can expect some pretty uninsightful letters to begin with. So those of you who are veterans with this know exactly what I'm talking about. I think we do a good job at preparing you for the angry letter, but you can have a hopeless or a sad or a promising I'll get better, a flight to health kind of letter. So these first couple of weeks, you're going to get letters that again, just give you a reference point of where they're starting. Some clients will go through something that looks like the stages of grief. Right? Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. So you might see them running the gamut of those kinds of letters written home. Part of it is we're observing them. Part of it is they're observing us. They're watching the group without interacting, and so they're learning group norms and group expectations. It helps give them a moment of kind of a 30,000 foot perspective, and they don't get triggered right away by the interactions. Simple things like packing their backpack. And lastly, it's part of their curriculum. They asked to join the group. Some of them aren't eager to join the group. Some of them want to stay out of the group for some time. And so with them, we might encourage and even bring them into the group without a request. But for the majority of the clients, we're talking about them advocating for themselves and asking to come into the group. The next phase that they move through, that some students and clients stay in for the duration of their program, is fire phase. This is about accountability and engagement. So some of it is about cooperation, as with any group setting. Following directions, respecting staff, nature, and their peers is a basic expectation. And they get a lot of peer feedback during the process. So there's some baseline that's accepted, that's required for behavior in that way. Replacing attacking language, aggressive language, passive-aggressive language with assertive language is a part of the process. They share their life story, their personal story with the group. So this is part of their introduction into the group as a whole. They start receiving therapy books. Many clients and students have a book throughout the entire program. Some get so lost in reading that we don't give them a book every week. The two books that are our standards are, and they're really on two ends of the continuum, The Knight in Rusty Armor and The Man's Search for Meaning. Two very different reading levels, and both really profound. They learn to make fires during this stage. They are given a fire set, their first fire set by the group. So each member of the group has to gift something from their own fire set. So they're always making and rotating through their fire set. That's the material that it takes to make a fire. They're practicing fire safety, knife safety. They make a fire pouch, a spoon. They have to take care of their gears. They're participating now in group chores. Honesty is a part of it. Communicating, like I said, respectfully. And then hygiene and self-care. In the early phases, we're monitoring them one-on-one. And now as a group, those kinds of observations are made at the group level. They're encouraged, invited to write their family weekly. If they don't, and some refuse to, that becomes a clinical issue. I want to say this as clearly as I can, and I think it's important, that it's important to understand that we don't want to use leverage too much. Sometimes I will want a student to not change behavior right away. I can really use a lot of leverage and put a lot of pressure on them to do things, but again, I want to spend some time learning and listening to the symptom, to the resistance, and what's it trying to say. A war story is a part of the fire phase, so you can expect that. That's where they write a story, talk about something inappropriate that they were doing at home, that you and I would deem inappropriate or unhealthy or maladaptive or self-sabotaging, but write about it like they were bragging to a friend. Many students, yours may not be one of them, but many students can write the letter that you want to hear. And this is the letter that they think you don't want to hear. I don't want to talk about partying to my parents in a positive way, because if I do, they're going to think that I'm not ready to give it up. And I want them to believe that I'm ready to give it up so that I can come home. They read the hopes and intentions letter at this point. It used to be called the impact letter. We changed it a couple of years ago. Now it's called the hopes and intentions letter. And they have a response that they write to you as a part of it. They write their letter of awareness, also used to be called the letter of accountability. Now we emphasize more of awareness. So they're getting responses. We don't want to coach them too much. We give them some guidelines for these assignments. But again, we don't want them to just check off the boxes. We don't want them to paint by numbers. There's plenty of leverage with them being here in the program. And if we overplay that hand, yes, we're going to get compliance. And for some people, that's a great accomplishment because they've struggled with compliance their entire life. But for many of them, it's a little bit too easy. And we really don't see where they're at. They start to participate in individual therapy more and more. Self-care becomes a part of it. At this point, they're eligible for solo. So the ideal is that they'll get at least one, maybe two solo experiences while they're with us, which is off by themselves. We check on them several times throughout the day, but we trust them enough to be in their own separate site that we set up for them, where they can't talk to a peer or talk to the staff, and spend two or three days just in mindful reflection. Even when we come by and check on them, the only way that we communicate is through paperwork, you know, writing a note to them and them to us. If there's an emergency, they can call their name out and we'll come running to their site. But there's virtually never been an emergency on solo in our more than 20 years. The third phase is water phase. Some clients and students get to this phase. You start to turn a corner where they're not just engaging in the program, but they're becoming more invested in the process. They're becoming invested in the work, in their own. They start to get a taste for the sweetness of the work. They're making crafts more, bowls, flutes, maybe a water gourd, leather crafts, things like that. They are then more likely to be assigned to mentor a student if they haven't yet. Personal hygiene is something that we pay attention to. All those executive functioning skills. And one of the things that we know is that there are so many learning profiles, learning differences. ADHD, executive functioning limitations that we can assess at this point. How are they doing with that? They're eating a balanced diet and focusing on the whole health, right? Mindfulness, meditation, yoga, becoming more invested in that process, receiving more and more feedback as they go along. And at this point, they're working on service. They're investing back in the group. It's not required that they become a leader, but it's a part of the water phase. We see what kind of leadership is in them. And some of them really rise to that occasion. It is our experience that the children learn more from teaching than they do from being taught. If you have to teach someone how to speak English, for example, you're going to learn more about English than if you're just taught to learn English. For those of you who have taught a second language, you know that that's true. Teaching is the greatest way to learn. Some clients make it to air phase. It's rare. It's not common. We specifically and intentionally designed the program so that a majority of them would not reach the air phase. In some ways, reaching air phase is an honor for sure, but in some ways it's a great challenge. Because at this point, they can be under the illusion that they're done, that they've arrived. And so the program was designed that a majority wouldn't reach this last phase to emphasize or underscore that it's a lifelong process. Evoke is just the beginning. It's the invitation to the hero's journey. It's not the end of the hero's journey. During air phase, we talk about freedom, more autonomy, definitely an emphasis in leadership, and we start talking about future plans, relapse prevention, becoming involved in having them be more and more involved. If you're at the air phase level, especially as an adolescent, you're going to have more input to what happens next. For young adults, it's different because they get to choose where they go next legally, they're going to have more say, more input earlier on in the stage process. They can be asked to lead a group for the day, to teach curriculum lesson. They can learn map and compass. At this point, we're not concerned about them being a run risk. So being able to use a map and compass is a part of this process. Good self-care and advocacy for themselves is an important part of it. Can they speak up and ask for things assertively? Asking for and inviting more and more feedback at this stage. By this point, you're expected to welcome feedback, to see the value in it. They can even lead others in therapy. Sometimes they'll be a part, they can even contribute to somebody else's treatment plan, somebody that they're close to or care about. They can take on that role like you might think of in a 12-step context, a sponsor-like role. We don't call it that, but it has that same flavor. They start to co-create their own assignments and the treatment plan with staff and therapists, right? They're a part of the process of creating assignments for themselves. We get very non-directive during the Earth Phase process. So what are some frequently asked questions? What is finished? That's what we want to steer away from, the idea that we're finished. I want to steer away from that idea with any client I've ever worked with in any context in my life as a therapist. I want to steer away from the idea of being finished myself. Right, one of the most dangerous pitfalls that any of us can fall into is believing that we've arrived, that we don't have something to learn. We talk about watching for the lazy creek. Lazy creek is a chair that they earn during the water phase. They get to sit in a chair that is from an outdoor store, right, instead of just sitting on a pad. And lazy creek is something that the students coined where they think they've arrived and they stop jumping up when there's a chore or an opportunity to volunteer. So watch for that coasting toward the end. Always measuring how much is external motivation, how much is internal, how much does that drive come from within versus paying attention to what peers, the praise and acknowledgement of peers or of staff or even of mom and dad. It's not linear, right? It's a symbolic process. You can go up and down in the process, in the stages. And we don't think of those as simple pass or failures. Because all of us go backwards and forwards in our goals, don't we? So we want to mirror as much. Wilderness therapy becomes this microcosm of the larger universe. Everything is underscored and emphasized because it's small. Because it's repeated over and over again. paying attention to process versus stagnating, right? A lot of them will get to a point of saying, I'm bored, I've had enough. And what I've said to them is, life is like that sometimes, right? In the early phases of the program, everything was new to you. Everything was novel. But when you get home, the great challenge about being home is that sometimes it's just a Tuesday. Not everything is an exciting new experience. Like I said, moving back and forth in the phases is a part of that. There are some objective measures, expectations that go along with these. And some, like I said earlier, that are subjective. We think about someone's progress as relative to where they started. And sometimes we talk about it, you will talk about it, with reaching specific goals. Some clients and students have had very little experience with reaching goals. Right? They're always giving up before the goal. They don't have the stamina, the delay of gratification, the frustration tolerance. So with that, we're going to pay attention to some absolute and objective goals. To give you perspective, water phase is rare. It's not somewhere around half to 60% of our students are going to make it to water phase, which means that the other 40% are going to graduate on fire phase or on air phase. And those numbers can change. I think it's a wonderful opportunity to fail. There's no other place that I want children, and parents for that matter, to regress, to measure themselves. Phone calls, field visits, letters that you write, more freedom with letters, writing siblings, writing a girlfriend or a boyfriend, maybe even somebody that you considered a negative influence, and seeing how that plays out can be a part of the process as they move along. We increase autonomy to give opportunities for backsliding. I want to be as clear as I can. Like I said earlier, I don't want us to think of it as just leveraging consequences for behavior. We want to practice with setbacks. And we want to stay away from simple box checking. And lastly, in the end, the phases are decided by the therapist. The therapist is the treatment team leader. He or she takes their impact from the peers, even, but principally the staff, but then the therapist makes the final call. They're done when they're done. They're done when you decide, based on the therapist and your framework, when it's the right time for them to move on. Where are they going? What level of care are they going to? Are they coming home? Is it their first treatment? Is this their second or their third treatment? How old are they? All of those things figure into the subjective answer, the subjective idea about when they're ready to leave. How integral is the packet? It's a guidepost. It's not everything. It is a tool. And I think it's very important that we separate out tools from the principles. Letter writing is a tool. Communication and the relationship is the principle that letter writing serves and the work that we do with writing back and forth. So it's important not to separate out the vehicle from the idea. The educational component, we have educational opportunities for young adults. We have an educational curriculum for those who haven't graduated from high school where they can earn 2 credits, and I'll go over those in just a minute. It's not a core piece of our program, but we still want something to do with education and reading and writing. Because for so many, that has been one of the things that has been a trigger for them. Maybe they have a learning difference. We talk about, we have an educational specialist who is helping us make sure that we deal with people with dyslexia or writing difficulties and provide them other vehicles. But just being in a classroom can be triggering. Just having an academic expectation can be triggering. And it's one of the markers that parents use to determine whether or not their child needs wilderness a lot of the time. So why remove the one thing that is the measure, in many cases for young people, of their level of functioning, and then pat yourself on the back when they're doing really well? So we have an educational component, and it is not a core part of the program, but we want it present. When do they get a phone call? That's up to the therapist. We encourage you in your online parent portal to ask the therapist in week two or three about the phone call so that you can begin to understand the conceptualization that they have around the phone call. Are they looking for a specific objective criteria? Are they looking for something to work on in family therapy? There's no one question and one answer to that. Can others write them? Typically, we start off with parents. Parents, step-parents, those who have served the role of the parents, and that could also be a grandparent or a guardian. That becomes the basis. And the expansion from there is very individualized. Most of my students got letters from siblings. Some of them were allowed to write peers and extended relatives. A few of them were allowed to write people that I or parents might consider a risk because we wanted to see what they would do with that autonomy. So it's a continuum, and talk to your therapist about where they're at. Can you see their journal? Like I said, it's the one thing that we encourage them to have private throughout the process. It's something that we don't read. We check it off very cursory at just a glance to make sure that they're writing, if they're capable of writing. But we don't read it. I want to talk about a little bit about their academic curriculum. Just go over this really quickly. So for those of you that are interested, some parents are, in the academic curriculum, before I wrap up with some kind of take-home ideas. Our coursework, Evoke Therapy Programs, offers customized curriculum accredited by Advanced Ed, and all teachers are certified by the Utah State Office of Education. What courses are offered? We've created a unique curriculum in which Wilderness is the classroom, which provides a hands-on learning environment. Our academics are based on a 90-hour curriculum that includes four subjects: English, psychology, biology, and physical education. Students have the opportunity to earn two Utah credits, half a credit in each subject. They're accredited by Advanced Ed. What if my child does not finish their work? Can they finish it later? No, all coursework must be completed during the program. Can partial credit be awarded? Yes. A student can earn partial credit in any area except the science courses if all the required assignments are completed. Who provides the transcript when my child finishes the course? Once our certified teachers have graded the work, the information is put in on a transcript and sent to the school that you identify. How long does it take for coursework to be graded? The turnaround time for grading by certified teachers can vary, and it is typically 2 weeks from the date that the student's work has been received by the teacher. And lastly, how long does it take to get a copy of the grades to parents or the school? This too can vary, but typically it's within 3 weeks from the time that the work is received by the teacher. So that gives you just a snapshot of our academics. Now the take home. This is an opportunity to practice progress and also to respond to flare-ups and regression. We want your children to have a range of experiences, successes and failures while they're with us. So frankly, the entire system can develop new ways of dealing with all of those various aspects of growth. It's really a peer culture based. While the therapist is the treatment team leader, with the staff being the hands-on, day-to-day administrators of the therapeutic curriculum, it's really a group process, a community-based program. Learning who they are through what they do is a part of the process, right? Experiential therapy is fantastic at accessing parts of the brain that simple language does not access. Trauma, wounding is accessed through experiential therapies in ways that simple talk therapy does not do. So they're constantly learning about who they are and what it means to belong and to be a self. It's not a behavioral program. Behavior is one indicator that we pay attention to, but we preach over and over and over again to all of our staff, to even the students and the clients, the same thing, that's not what it's about. We've created a rites of passage model. There's a lot of criticism today about the lack of rites of passages common in our culture. So these phases are more about rites of passage, about an individual's moving through stages of their own personal growth, using ceremony and metaphor to demarcate each of the stages for the child. A huge emphasis on whole health curriculum. right? Body, mind, and spirit. What I love about wilderness, even if you pulled the traditional therapy that is a really important part of wilderness therapy, that I think is probably one of the most misunderstood things about wilderness therapy, is that it's a sophisticated therapeutic approach. But even if you pulled that out of all that we do, you would still have a lot of elements that help people progress in mental health. Exercise, healthy diet, healthy sleep, relationships, right? All of that, even without the formal therapy, is an important part of healing. And then the idea that ultimately, a core idea, right down to our name, Evoke, the idea is to evoke out of everybody, out of you, out of your child, the truth that's already in there, that's buried beneath shame and guilt and fear and anger, right? To pull it out of everybody, the truth and the wisdom that is hidden behind the symptoms, behind the mental illness or the addiction. And I love this quote from Gil out of her book, Finding Human. She says, "But especially with regard to emotional matters, description may not be the most effective road to take. Here, it may be more preferable to evoke the emotion or the experience. And often that time, that's through storytelling and letter writing." So that's an overview of the growth phases. So you see the part that it plays and the part that it doesn't play in our process. And also the principles that we can extrapolate and use in our own lives and at home. I'm happy to take any questions if there are any live questions before I go on to upcoming events. And then there's space at the end for any live questions. All right, upcoming parent support groups. I will be in Chicago on October 27th at 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. That's on a Sunday. So hope to see you there. I'll be in New York on November 4th. That's our usual Monday evening time, 7 to 9 p.m. We're going to do a different Southern California location in the South Bay. So that's Manhattan Beach, I believe. I believe that's where it's at. That'll be on December 1st at 3:30 to 6:30. It's our usual potluck followed by a two-hour support group. Please RSVP or get more information by emailing melanie@evoketherapy.com. Our next two intensives are full, but they're, in my opinion, the best investment that you can make in yourself and even in your child in many ways, is to attend one of our intensives. I just got done running one in England, and it was as wonderful as they all are. So our standard intensive is our Finding You. That's for any adult individual. Like I said, October, November are full. We are exploring offering a December date. In 2020, we have our dates set. You can go to our webpage. January 8th, February 19th, March 4th are the next three after the start of the year. Go to our website or email intensives@evoketherapy.com for more information. Pursuits trips are adventure trips all over the world for families or young adults. Think therapy light or sober fun. Reconnecting, you can combine that with some intensive work or some therapy work also. We ask all current parents to attend 6 12-step support groups. Any combination of Al-Anon, CODA, Family Anonymous, or adult children. So you can go to those websites and explore meetings in your area. Any relative city and any relatively large city in the U.S. and around North America and even in Europe is going to have 12-step meetings several times throughout the week. So find one that works for you. Try 6 different ones if you can find the one that works for you. You can also invite your teenager to Alateen. So go to alanon.alateen.org. For Teens, Refuge Recovery is a support group that's Buddhist-inspired, less focused on a higher power. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI.org, is a place you can go to get free resources and education in your area. So that's a great resource that a lot of people swear by. You can listen to all these broadcasts on your podcast app by just searching Evoke Therapy Programs on your favorite podcast app. On an iPhone or an iOS device, just use the podcast app. On an Android device, use the SoundCloud app. Or on your computer, go to soundcloud.com. On Twitter and Instagram, you can find Evoke Therapy Programs by using the handle @EvokeTherapy. You can also find the Evoke Summit Lodge by using the @EvokeSummitLodge handle on Instagram. On Facebook, you can find Evoke by searching Evoke Therapy Programs. You can also find the Alumni Foundation on Facebook by searching Evoke Family Foundation. By the way, we're looking for new board members for the Evoke Foundation. So if you want to be a part of an organization that helps people, that raises money for people that can't afford therapy, the Evoke Family Foundation is a great place for you to give back and to give those who can't afford it. The Evoke Therapy blog on our website has new content each week. My book, The Journey of the Heroic Parent, is available on Amazon. You can also find it on Audible. If you go through the Parent Alumni Foundation book page on through the Amazon Smiles program, a percentage of the proceeds go to the charity to help people that can't afford therapy. Are there any questions that I haven't addressed that you'd like me to address relative to this or any topic, really? Looks like I've either covered the subject adequately or you have no energy for any questions. So thank you for joining us. Please peruse our vast library of webinars and podcasts. Begin to acquaint yourself with them. Begin to see the kind of thinking that goes into this way of healing for everybody. In my experience, the kind of healing that parents can do in this process does so much for them and so much for their children to help to maintain and even further the gains that have been started in a wilderness therapy program. So thank you for joining us for and on behalf of your children. It makes a big difference in their lives as well as your lives. Take care, and I'll talk to you next week. My next broadcast, I'm really excited about this one. Something new I haven't done ever. I'm going to be talking about inner child work, and that might sound like psychobabble or airy-fairy language, but I really invite you to attend it, to listen into it, because it talks about a very simple idea about thinking about what happened to us as a child, imagining ourselves as young children, and the relationship between being able to listen to the messages of that long-lost child inside of all of us and the relationship that has to parenting our own children, even our own relationships with our spouses. So I'm going to make that connection. That'll be Monday, October 21st at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. So I hope to find you on that also. Have a great week. Take care, folks, and I'll talk to you then. Bye-bye. My